Hello and welcome to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. It's a podcast focused on culture, history, travel, and even a little entertainment from time to time. I think you'll enjoy traveling with me and my guests, my clients, and friends on each episode. Today's episode is entitled, What If President John F. Kennedy Had Not Been Assassinated? What would the world be like today? As an author, podcaster, and business coach, I invite you to subscribe to my newsletter by visiting my landing page at DennisMansfield.com and clicking onto the yellow bar with writing on it. It's nice to have you with us. I'm Dennis Mansfield.
Thank you for joining Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. As John Hay, one of the most famous men of the 19th century, once said, all the great prizes in life are just around the corner. Let's go there together.
You know, in a sense, the title for today's episode is a bit misleading, though we will talk about what the world would be like if John F. Kennedy had not been assassinated on November 22nd, 1963. I want to use that as an endpoint rather than a subject matter per se. See, what I'd like to do is share with you, maybe invite you into my library, as I talk to you about how I write so that it might be an encouragement to you about how you could write. See, ultimately, because I'm a coach, I coach people who want to write. So take this as an opportunity for you to sit down at your keyboard and do some typing away with ideas, creative ideas that come as a result of listening or viewing this particular episode of Just Around the Corner. So I came to a point, having written a number of nonfiction books, that I really wanted to expand the horizons. So in a very, I think, organic fashion, my wife and I were in Europe, and we were biking with some close friends across five different countries next to the Danube River. And suddenly, we found ourselves in Vienna, Austria, and we were having a lunch, and the waiter came up and said, welcome to Central Plots. And something inside of me clicked, and I went, Central Plots, something happened here. Historically, I'm a big fan of history. I love little trivia pieces that come around. He said, look, a lot of things happened in Austria here, especially in Vienna. What are you referring to? I said, no. It's a confluence of a bunch of interesting people that came. He goes, oh, you mean Cafe Central? And I said, that's right. It was a BBC article that I had read years before, but was still in my thinking patterns. What had happened was that there was a cafe in Vienna, Austria, where young Adolf Hitler and young Joseph Stalin and middle-aged Vladimir Lenin and young Leon Trotsky and very young Marshal Tito all lived around this coffee shop. It's like, how bad was the voodoo in that water, right? And they were all young men, all coming together, actually in the coffee shop at the same time at various times. And so I thought, we got to go see it. So we drove our bikes down there, went in, beautiful place. If you're ever in Vienna, Austria, you must go to Cafe Central. What went through my mind was, I've got to write a book on it. Well, while I was thinking about how to write it, I also started thinking about changing history. If you could, would you? Which then led me to a childhood moment in time when I was 7 years old, when President John F. Kennedy came into our local area of Texas, where my dad was stationed as an Air Force NCO, and communicated to the city of San Antonio and then to the community of Dallas, except he was cut down on his way to give that speech. So here I was at seven, being in the community. The next day, John F. Kennedy is hurled into eternity. And it left an impression of, boy, I wish there was some way that we could have helped. So in my writing, I began with this book, To Trust in What We Cannot See, and then moved ultimately the arc to the book that I had wanted to do from when I was a young kid, thinking about the empires of dirt. The idea of what would happen if we could save people's lives, what would happen if certain people's lives, in fact, were cut short. So in that process, as a writer, as an author, I began to say, where can I start? Well, I'm also a Christian. And so when I read the Bible, I love when God speaks. And at one point, Moses said, oh, how are you going to use me? And God says to him, what's in your hand? And he looks and he sees a staff, and he goes, a staff. God then began the process of unfolding to him how he could use that staff and be used as a leader. Well, as I sat there reading and thinking and cogitating on what I wanted to do with the story of these incredible bad men who probably should have died in order to help ultimately, the second part of it, a good man who didn't need to die. What I did was I said, what's in my hand? And what was in my hand, literally staring at me in my face, was a first volume of Ulysses S. Grant's memoirs. This is a first volume signed with an overview of an individual who was the first owner of the book, and he ended up writing his name at the very front of it, and his name is Oral Bacchus, B-A-C-K-U-S. And when Mr. Bacchus wrote this, it turned out that he had been with Ulysses S. Grant. And I went, wait a minute. He's writing all through this? I can go through and see it. How about if in my writing about this arc of history, could I use him? He ended up being a central piece to the book. And in the book, it turns out, I looked around on the table in my library, and there was a second book, and it was called Hitler, the Missing Years. And I went, wait, this is a first edition, signed again book by an individual who spent time with Ernst Hofenschuckel, who is the author of this book and who had been with Hitler in the early years before the war, and then ultimately went to prison and did his time and came back and was a fruitful citizen for the Germans. And I read through his book and I went, my heavens, what would life have been like if we could take all these historical people and then bring them through some sort of 88 miles an hour reference to the DeLorean and to the opportunity in Back to the Future to go back through time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you this, that when we open ourselves up to creativity and writing, things start popping. And I decided, well, how can I create that DeLorean? And I came across then, there in my library, a book called The Newton Papers. And it's an overview by Sarah Dry, Dr. Sarah Dry, who did a fantastic job of looking at Isaac Newton and finding out that, in fact, Isaac Newton had been a committed Christian and had done an incredible overview while he was doing all of his other science discovery and reviews to be able to do one on the Bible. He did a complete overview of the Old and the New Testament that was never found until 1936, from the 1700s to 1936. So is it another player in this open saga of my writing? Once I get the players, then comes the issue of how to orchestrate them for the team. Well, in the first book, in To Trust in What We Cannot See, I came across the fact that Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, had a fascination with the Civil War, with Grant, ultimately with Lincoln, and that Lincoln himself had such a huge impact, we all know historically, but could have had such an even bigger and greater view had he lived, not being cut down by the assassin. Again, the linchpin linking over to the John F. Kennedy book, Empires of Dirt. And I decided at that point, I'm going to write a trilogy, not just two books, but three. And the reason I did was because one of the characters that I got permission to put into my books is C.S. Lewis. The C.S. Lewis Foundation was kind enough to allow me to include him in to Empires of Dirt. And so I went back and read his trilogy, which a lot of people don't even, have never even heard of. It's the Space Trilogy, and it's about space and time. So you're following the track. Suddenly, there's something in front of me that is a Ulysses S. Grant signed book. Suddenly, there's the Newton paper. Suddenly, there's the opportunity to read about Hitler from someone who knew him and knew him in those days. And then bringing that together with Lewis's idea, I then included C.S. Lewis as one of the characters in Empires of Dirt. I am thrilled because fundamentally, as we move towards the idea of what would have happened had John Kennedy lived, unpacking these books, I decided, and bear with me as I read something. Ordinarily, I don't do that, but bear with me. It is the first page in my manuscript, yet obviously in the publishing process, and it's called The New Story, Election Night. Election night was coming to a close. The windy November night seemed to be blowing change all across the country. The votes for president had been tallied, but not yet announced. Crowds surged, moving forward and sideways like waves of amber grain, waiting for the announcement of who would lead the United States of America as president. The Democratic nominee was a rare find, a young man of color whose roots mixed in with the roots of the nation. A community organizer by career, he didn't really give speeches, as did other Kennedys. He preached messages. Those messages thrilled his audiences. And throughout the campaign, he spoke of change and hope. And like every good preacher, when it was his time to pass the plate, the donations flowed. As the first black nominee to a major political party, he raised a lot of money. He raised even more votes, and he won. "Ladies and gentlemen," said the voice on the microphone, "it is my great honor to introduce for the first time the president-elect of the United States." He paused, and the crowd could hear a catch in his voice. All stood silently. He recovered. The president-elect of the United States and his wife, the Reverend M.L. King, and the future First Lady, Coretta Scott King. What? The date on this? November 5th, 1968. And that is how I began the process of shocking my audience, those that love my books, to go, this was Barack Obama. What are you talking about? No. Part of what happened, and most people don't realize this, is that Martin Luther King in 1968 was preparing to run for president. He already had a committee that was starting up. There was movement to do that because he had a presence as a late 30s minister that was a world figure, Nobel Peace Prize winner. He had everything that it took. So what would have happened? My argument was I had to go back through time, and in my DeLorean, I used the issue of telluric currents. They're currents that go all around the world. And I used the idea, if you could take DNA off of every book that ever had anybody write on it, there's DNA, degraded or not, that if you could put your thumb on the DNA, stand next to the telluric current, step into it, you would go to when the book was written, or at least when the signature on it was placed. And that was my DeLorean. And so all through the story of book one and now book two has been the idea that this story would go and change the lives. So how do you change the life? Well, again, research is part of my life. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I came across an amazing book. It's called Reclaiming History. Now, this looks like a tome. It isn't. It was a joy to read. It was a joy to study. Vincent Bugliosi was the prosecutor who built the case against the Charles Manson family. He wrote this particular volume based on reclaiming the history of the Kennedy assassination. And he determined at that point that it was not a conspiracy from behind the grassy knoll, that it was from behind shots that hit Kennedy and killed Kennedy. I was stunned when I read this. Why? Because it took the idea of the Warren Commission's work and it legitimized it by saying the practical reality of time, space, and energy and effort showed that, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald did do it, was caught, and ultimately arrested, and then of course was killed. But the difference was, as I began the preparation, was a book that came my way called Mortal Error. Again, in my library, sitting there staring at it, out at me, saying, "Read me." And I picked it up and I went, "Holy cow." Along with a second book called JFK, The Smoking Gun. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is fact. I'm just telling you that this particular man's theory is remarkable. And he was one of the individuals who was called on by CBS News, Walter Cronkite, to reenact the shooting of Kennedy a year after the November 22nd assassination. And this individual saw that it could have occurred, but it would have been very, very, very difficult. So what was the question? Well, they did a ballistics exam and they went through and said, there's a high probability that two rounds entered into Kennedy. One from the Mannlicher Carcano that went like a they called it the pristine bullet, went through him, did that. And then the head wound that ended his life was from a higher velocity AR-15. I've had people in my research say they didn't even have AR-15s in 1963. And what I found was, yes, indeed, they did. And there was an AR-15 sitting on the floor of the Secret Service contingent's car behind President Kennedy. And when the rounds were fired off by Oswald, the argument goes that there one of the Secret Service men picked up the AR-15 and accidentally killed John F. Kennedy. Now, it is a theory that has been unbelievably challenged and yet still holds solid on many levels. Am I a conspiratorial person? No, not at all. I love facts. And I love taking those facts and then creating story out of them. So the argument for me was, if that's the case, let's suggest that for the fictional story, as a writer, I had to stop that weapon from being fired. And I built my story around that for Empires of Dirt, at which point Kennedy did end up living, that the weapon did not take him down, that he was able to then run in 64, be elected, and then build up, based on the ongoing civil rights movement, a relationship with Martin Luther King and his brother Robert Kennedy as well, ultimately moving towards the idea that had Kennedy lived, so much of the America that we now know would not be what we now have. For example, most likely there would not have been a Ronald Reagan, because Ronald Reagan's rise, if most people don't realize this, that he ran for president in 68 and lost. He ran for president in 76 and lost. He ran for president in 1980 and then finally won. By 1980, there might not have been a Jimmy Carter to run against. In other words, every protagonist needs an antagonist. And Carter would not most likely have been there, although he could have been. It wouldn't have been in a situation of turmoil because of Vietnam, because of Watergate, because of all those other that would have caused the rise of a Reagan. So I went through and I examined that. And when I came back to it, I realized, wow, what a pivot point that a moment in time or a series of moments in time, if mitigated, could end up creating an entire new world, an entire new story, and an entire new present that we who occupy the space and time of this world would be living in. Now, that's why I'm a fiction writer. That's why I'm enjoying the idea of taking fact and nonfiction stories, moving them through a time process and a change of space and time in order to bring about a new opportunity and challenge the reader. Why? Well, the stories are there. I find them wonderful to research, a joy to write. I would love you to go to my website, DennisMansfield.com, and then click on author, and then go to the new book, Empires of Dirt. I've got the first couple chapters in there. You could read it, take a look at it, see what you think, and then let me know. And then we'll make sure that that you're connected to a way of getting a published version of it. Right now, though, I'm asking you in your life to consider the what-ifs of what you have done and the what-ifs of what you're facing today. See, I believe that everything is spiritual. And in that capacity, the things that we do today that have negative consequences because we weren't wise in what we were deciding when we did it could be mitigated if someone would just say, stop, drop, and roll. Think before you cheat, steal, lie, whatever it happens to be. Think before you get drunk and go driving. Think before you leave your family and your children grow up without a father or a mother. Think before you do what you're doing. Do not just react to the world, but respond to the world. And in that is my greatest hope, that the books that I write, the books that should you make the decision to read or listen to on Audible, I do Beautiful Nate, and I do To Trust in What We Cannot See, and there'll be others that I do for Audible. Listen to them and be challenged in your own world, in your own life. That's the desire of my heart. Do I want to change the world? No. I just want to change your world. And if I can do that, then I think in the long run, much will have been accomplished. And whether we're looking at the case of President Kennedy's living or dying, we're also, more importantly, looking at your life of living or dying. What are the things that give you life? And what are the things that take away life? So that you can make your decisions and be wise about that. So that's just around the corner with Dennis Mansfield today. Hoping you are challenged to think about what's just around your corner.